Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and I'm Al Warren. On the other side of the world, we've got Mr. Marty.
Mr. Marty?
Marty. I was thinking that you know.
Is that my new name?
Your name should be Marty. 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 It's Marty.
Well, that is kind of a Boston name, maybe.
Yeah, Boston.
Yeah. Boston.
Mr. Marty. Well, so it was your birthday. You got lots of people saying happy birthday and cheers to you. And, of course, not me.
That's right.
I tell you. I'm sorry. I was out of
time. Was it your birthday, too?
No.
Yeah?
No. I don't even know when my birthday
Beatles song, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and you're in the writer's finals for the Hubbard thing.
Yeah, I made semifinals.
Well, there you go.
They sent me a certificate and all that stuff.
That's pretty exciting, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Make your nipples hard?
It did.
Well,
they still are.
Yeah. Well, that's really exciting because then you don't have to be a Scientologist either.
No, it's separate. It's separate. I'll just try to get me in trouble. That's what's going on.
Yeah, they're going to be knocking on your door. They're coming right over. Because I give them your address. They contacted the show, and I said, yeah, Harry, he lives right here.
Oh, wait a minute. That's who's knocking on the door right now.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, it's L. Ron Hubbard. He's back.
He's back.
He's back just for you.
Ah, perfect.
Well, okay, so the weeks continue, and today we are... continuing with writers, and today we've got an interesting one. He used to be a doctor, and now he's writing books. So let's find out why. So let's welcome B. Marshall Craig to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate you being on. Letting me be on your show.
Oh, it's really our pleasure. You know, we had one other doctor here before, and she's never come back. So, no, we've had a few, but I really find that interesting. You had a 30-year medical career, and so you've taken that and you've kind of moved into writing, which is not always an easy jump. It's not easy for really good writers to make a career out of it. So what gave you the push to go from doctor to author?
That's a good question. I've actually been doing it for quite a while. I originally began after all of my surgical training about 5 years into private practice. And my second son at the time was born in 1995. And I used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and feed him. And then after feeding him, I would pull out ancient it is ancient now. Dell laptop, you got to remember in the 1990s and when they first had laptop computers, and would actually type from about 4:30 until 6 before I'd get ready to go to surgery. And I did that every morning. And I actually wrote the first book of my series back in the late 1990s. And that's why my series, the Dr. Kyle Chandler Thriller Series, is set in the 1990s. About 5 years into my private practice, I tried to get some recognition to get that work published, but I was so busy with my medical practice, it just kind of fell by the wayside. And then, believe it or not, it sat on the shelf for 25 years. About 6.5 years ago, I retired from the busy field of surgery and medicine, and now I'm actually a full-time winemaker and vineyard manager up in a vineyard winery up in the mountains of western North Carolina. And so when I got up here after a couple of years, I dusted off that story, re-edited it to some degree, and found a publisher who loved it, and it was published back in October of 2020. The thing that I have going for me is I had over 30 years in medicine with all my training and private practice to write down about all kinds of interesting characters and unbelievable situations that I've stored up for 30 years. And now, in not just one book, but my second book of the Dr. Kyle Chandler series is coming out today called Hidden Agendas. And it contains a protagonist that's kind of a conglomeration of different surgeons I worked with and knew about during my 30 years in medicine.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So now you're up drinking wine and smoking a pipe and writing. Wow. I've seen that. So you're really kind of taking a lot of what you lived in your life as a doctor and turning that into books. Like, that's a very big part of the stories.
It is. I try to make the plot. Now, there's two things in my stories that I really try to emphasize. Number one, a changing, fast-moving plot. And number two, really quick, snappy dialogue between characters. And it really makes the story move along. But the different medical situations, I try to make them and explain them in a very plain manner, and they're not very, very long in the book, so that even someone who's never been exposed to the field of medicine will understand it. And mainly to do this to show how complicated a trauma surgeon's life is. My protagonist, Dr. Kyle Chandler, he's a trauma surgeon in Kansas City, and he kind of, in the first book, backs into a side career of private investigation. Along the way, he meets a really headstrong woman who runs her own antique business that's really successful there in Kansas City. And like a lot of relationships, they immediately cannot stand each other. And that's a lot of good relationships. That's how it happens sometimes. So in this second book, he's off to a conference in London, and his relationship with this woman has gotten further along the line. And I planned it from the first to be a series of novels, not just one novel, because there was a lot of stories, and there's still a lot of stories, medical stories I want to tell. And so actually there's the third novel that I'm finishing up on to be published probably sometime next year, and I've actually started an outline to the fourth one.
Do you have this kind of all outlined in your mind or outlined on paper ahead of time? Like, do you kind of know what these books are all going to contain in general, kind of a storyline, and then you fill in the details as you do the book? Or is this totally ad lib?
Well, like a lot of answers to my questions is yes and no. as a surgeon, you want to always outline what you're going to do and what you're going to plan when you go to surgery. But whenever I'm thinking of a main story of a book, I'll have a main plot, and then I'll make an outline. And then the way I usually, not always, write it is start with a really unusual, fast-paced beginning, and then I'll skip to a really surprising, twisting, turning ending. And then it really kind of throws me for a loop to myself when I'm going from the beginning to the end. It never turns out exactly like I thought. I will wake up sometimes in the middle of the night or even in the morning and write down or write on my phone a list of notes of strange things that reminded me of my surgical training or things like that that would work really well for a thriller novel.
Well, I'm wondering, after, you know, so long a time in between, when you came back to your first novel, did you have to alter the plot because of the change in technology and just everything that had happened? Were there a lot of things that you had to kind of exercise from that? Or, you know, were you just able to just maybe update the technology a little bit and go from there?
Well, the part about the technology, I did not need to, because all of my stories are set in the 1990s. And you got to remember, in the 1990s, there was no internet. There were no cell phones. Mm. My two sons can't believe I actually grew up without a cell phone, how I actually lived and breathed. And so that is set in the 1990s, and you have to kind of point that out. And I actually had to go back and do some research of when laptops first came in, when cell phones were first starting to be used, because I remember all that before that. And so the technology part wasn't so difficult. The re-editing was easier because my younger son is a excellent journalist in Los Angeles, and he helped me kind of reorganize the pathway of the plot to where it flowed a lot better. It seemed to make it in a much better, cleaner overall order.
Now, both books will be on their own, even though they're part of a series. Like, you could pick up The Hidden Agenda and read it. You don't need to have read Cut to the Chase.
No, you're exactly correct. You can read the second one, and that's going to be the same way with the third one, where you'll understand what the protagonist does, his relationship with his girlfriend, and understand all that. You don't need to know all of the recurring characters or not. It's easily stand out on their own.
And, you know, Dr. Kyle Chandler, like, that's a really good name. That could be a TV show. Like, oh, for us older guys, you know, we know Marcus Welby and all that. It could be Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, the problem is a lot of readers don't remember who Marcus Welby was.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I know, I was going to say, but when I hear the name, I think, oh, yeah, that could be, I could see that being a show, you know. Well, for the older ones.
Well, here's what's interesting. I chose that name back in the early 90s. And since then, there's been an actor, Kyle Chandler, who's on Friday Night Lights. That's his actual name. So I always say I chose the name before he became famous.
You should make him change his name. So, no, but I wonder, so who is Dr. Kyle Chandler? Is that you, or is there a lot of you in that character?
That's exactly what my younger son said. Who is this? And it is not me. It is a number of different surgeons I worked with, I trained with, and I was not a trauma surgeon. I was a plastic reconstructive surgeon. I did a lot of trauma surgery, putting people's faces and a few other things back together for 25 years. But it's kind of a combination of different traits and stubbornness, although my younger son says the stubborn part definitely comes from you, Dad.
Well, there you got it. That's good. Now you know you're one of your main characteristic points. But I wonder now, with Kyle Chandler, how do you decide which doctors or which personalities you're going to take to combine someone like that? How do you go about developing a character like that?
Well, I started off with someone who's logical. I'm not going to give away the whole story, but he had a huge tragedy that happened while he was during his residency, and it really, his young wife died in a car wreck, and it just threw a loop for him for a number of years. And I had a friend of mine whose spouse did die during surgical residency, and it's devastating. It's devastating anytime. But so I threw that part into there. I also made him a lot more of a smart aleck than I am, although, like I said, my younger son says a little bit of that's coming from me. And he kind of softens as his character goes, and he realizes that he kind of backs into this private investigation gig, and he likes it, and he likes it a lot, and he likes it almost as much as surgery. The problem is his schedule is so difficult, and the woman he's dating is so difficult, it's hard for them to get on the same page sometimes, but the conversations between the two are really quick-paced, quick dialogue, almost like I really like a lot of the things that Aaron Sorkin has done in the screenplays and television scripts, where the dialogue goes very, very fast and is very, very fun to follow.
You feel like when someone reads this book, it's going to be kind of a, because you call it a medical thriller, and that always, it's always interesting to me. So it's really kind of like a suspense thriller mystery centered around the medical community.
Right. And so far, the medical situations in are humorous, very unique, but really not part of the thriller plot. He, because he's a newbie in this, of working part-time for this investigation firm, he backs into some situations that he has no business doing, and he almost gets into really big trouble several different times. He seems to figure a way out of this in both of the books and including the third book, but not at all like you from the beginning, which how you think it might have happened.
That's really interesting. And where did you get the lead female character role? Is that after your wife, or
probably not? She, because the female character is just as much or more of a smart aleck than he is, and she too got burned prior to getting just about getting married, and so she's been on edge about taking on a serious relationship. And so, like a lot of relationships, they butted heads big time in the first book. And they kind of had to help each other out to get through certain things. And then the attraction starts going and becomes more so in this book. In the third book, it becomes more. And then you come to the decisions of what do you do a year or two down the road of how the relationship furthers or not. And that's always a big hassle that you have to overcome if you're going to keep a long-term relationship.
Yeah, plus you like your wife.
Oh, exceedingly. She's extremely tolerant. She's way tolerant. But she's the queen of the family. I have two grown sons and then myself. And I always said, I'm not going to have seven more children so me and the kids can have more votes than my wife.
So if someone picks up your book, takes it home and reads it, what is it you want them to take away from the book? Besides the story, is there some sort of a subtext or some sort of theme that you hope people kind of get in your writing?
Yeah, I try to set it up in each book to where the protagonist is kind of like David going out to face Goliath. And it looks like the odds are going to be overwhelming, and he has no business being in those situations. But some way, somehow, the theme of never give up always comes up, and he seems to eke through at the end. And so with the quick-paced plot and this quick dialogue, I want people to enjoy the read to where the more they read it, the quicker they want to turn the pages to see what's going to happen next.
Wow. You know, when we come back to this, so you wrote that first book in 95, or the basics of it.
Right.
And what was it besides being drunk on wine and smoking a cigar?
I didn't have any time for that back then. I was going 1,000 miles an hour. So that was, and you know, here's what's interesting. I'm a winemaker and a vineyard manager, and I really don't have time to drink that. I've got too much to do.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm surrounded by wine people, so I know what you mean.
Well, I'm wondering, too, kind of in the same vein, what was it like coming back to writing after the absence? Was it difficult to get back in the flow, or did it just feel natural and did you just pick it right back up?
Well, it's interesting because, in several interviews I've done, they've talked about writing habits and writer's block. And I don't have writer's block, but it's sometimes when I sit down at the keyboard.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's just not there. And if so, I try not to force it. But there's other times when I'll have ideas I've jotted down and I'll come back later and have a fresh point of view. And for some reason, it kind of gets things going. A lot of the times I'll have an outline and there's five topics there. And the four that I thought I might want to write about, I have no business writing about. And the fifth one, just ideas start flowing and it just starts typing. And before I know it, 2 or 3 hours have gone by. And so, that doesn't mean everything I write, it stays by any means, because once you start putting it together, a lot of stuff gets cut out and realizes that's not going to help out in the plot. And so, but I do like to be away from other people, but when I'm doing this, but a lot of times there'll be noises going on in the background and I really can't even hear them.
Right, right. Well, yeah, and you probably take the same work structure that you had as a surgeon for 30 years and put it towards writing.
I do. So, the one thing that writing has done, particularly over the last couple of years, since I do it more and more each week, is my thought structure for 30 years in medicine, it's pretty well set where you have a problem and you're trying to get to a solution to the problem. And you need to have multiple alternative methods to get to the solution. Here in writing, there's a whole lot less constriction, and things that you think may not contribute toward may be a wonderful way of taking a different viewpoint of it. So it's really opened up kind of how I express myself rather than within a confined structure as I did in medicine for 30 years.
You know, when you finish doing one of these books and it's all done and it gets published, Do you look back and see a change in yourself after going through the process?
I do. I realize, you know, you can always get better. And just like any other thing or semi-perfectionist, oh, I could have done that a little better, or maybe if I had changed this. But once after I spend about 3 months hassling with the editors, which are wonderful at my publishing house, we have a series of three editors we go through. And so you start fighting tooth and nail back and forth of what you think just needs to stay in and get out. Once it gets finished, and I actually just move on to the next one. I really do.
Yeah. No, editors are awful. I kill them off all the time.
Come on. Well, here's the thing, too. My dialogue, I don't put in complete English complete sentences. That's not the way people talk. People talk in phrases and do start a lot of sentences with but and that drives editors nuts. But when you and I are just talking, they're short, choppy ideas, not complete sentences with punctuation and the like. And so when there's a quick pace back and forth dialogue, it is going to be choppy, but it really makes the overall scene flow.
Yeah, it makes sense. Do you at this point of time, political correctness and stuff, do you worry about how the dialogue goes between the people? Because you're writing in the 90s, so things were a little bit looser in that sort of term, right? People could, were freer with words, let's say, and there was less backlash than there is today. So do you concern yourself on how you have your characters talk to each other?
I try not to purposely get into some difficult political situations. I try to keep the plot going so fast, there's really no time for prejudice against any kind of minority or anything like that. There's not tons of overt violence, sex, or whatever in my books. I'm trying to keep the interest on the characters and the plays and the plot. Although, you know, each of these characters are very witty and very much making fun of each other to the point to where it does keep the dialogue quick. But yes, I do have to go back and think, now, is this how we did it in the 1990s?
Right. Yeah, because there is a slight difference.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it seemed, for me, it seemed a little bit happier in the 90s, but maybe that's just, you know, old age and I'm slipping away. You know, but it seemed a little bit happier. But so with medical thriller and again, you know, with the current climate, with people that kind of are, you know, like the doctors and the media are the enemies. You know, there's that kind of taint out there a little bit. Does that sort of ever put you on guard, or do you ever worry about that?
A little bit, but the story is usually on the thriller aspect of it and how he's doing his job as a doctor and trying to help people out, but then slip away to do the private investigation part. And so there's less emphasis on the technical medical aspects of it, although it is all correct. None of the procedures or anything like that are fabricated or anything of that sort. It is more emphasis on the thriller component part, and as the story progresses, how Kyle Chandler is going to get out of the difficult situations he's put himself into.
Yeah. So did you always want to be a private investigator yourself?
I didn't, but I always did like suspense, thriller, murder, mystery novels of sorts. I like the ones that, the way I'm trying to do it, it's not always easy, but that turn out a lot different than you thought they were going to.
Yeah. That's the most interesting ones anyway, you know. I wonder, so where do you think you're going to go with this now? You've got your second one out now, you said you've got your third one in the works and stuff. So is this something you think you'll be doing now for a while?
I'm still doing it on the side. I am a full-time winemaker and vineyard manager, and since COVID came out in March of 2020, our winery is just going 1,000 miles an hour with everyone coming to the winery now. And so I can't do that forever. It is a very physical job. I do have people help me with the physicality part of it, but I do want to keep writing in this series until I feel like it's probably gone its way and that's it. But I do have a lot of stories written down that I experienced or heard about during my medical training that I still want to put into words and do it in a form like this, to where you mix it with a suspense thriller. It's a very interesting thing to read.
So everyone's going to the winery. Everyone's getting drunk.
There's a lot of people from Florida that come up here, and they used to come and visit. Now I think half of Florida has moved up to North Carolina.
they can't wait that long to get the wine.
It's yeah. Been out of control, like I said, since March of 2020.
Well, yeah, it's crazy. Did COVID itself, when all of the peak time and everything hit and stuff, did that sort of affect your writing as well? Like, do you sort of find that the stressful things going on like that around you sort of interferes with some of your writing?
It really didn't interfere with the writing aspect. It put a huge kink in my first novel's promotion, because by October of 2020, when it came out, Cut to the Chase, all the bookstores locally and also statewide in North Carolina had closed down. You couldn't even go in them to buy a book. And so for promotion, other than online, that was about it. And so now at this time, it really hasn't changed, nor did it really change my writing. As my younger son, who's a journalist, says, well, it's going to be okay for you, Dad, because it's a whole lot cheaper than psychotherapy. And he's right about that.
I'll say, you know. It's an interesting time right now, so it's can affect things. So, well, who do you find your favorite writers were?
I, believe it or not, read a lot of different. I do like suspense, thriller, and mystery novels, no doubt about it. But I read biographies, I read nonfiction, historical fiction, all kinds of things. The suspense thriller authors, probably. I like the Gabriel Alon series by Daniel Silva. I like most, not all, of John Grisham's work. Robert Ludlum, of course. Tom Clancy's very technical, but I still like that. And then one from the 60s and 70s, there's Steeplechase Horse Mysteries, or Dick Francis. That's a long time ago, but those are all interesting to me.
It is. Do you ever watch any of them on the Netflix or any of the old series or anything like
not
that?
Not as those? Much. I would like to. We watched some, but not tons. I will say, like the rest of America, we watched more during COVID than we ever have cumulatively up to that point. But I've always liked the book part of it. And it drives my wife nuts when I get a really good book, because she can read a book in about a day, and then 2 days later she can't remember what it was. When I start reading a really good book and you find one that's really good, I start going slower, and it just drives her nuts. Mm. But 6 months later, I can still tell you the plot, the characters, halfway through what happened. I mean, when I find a really good book, that's one I want to latch on.
I feel the same way. I have the same thing happen. I slow down, especially if I really enjoy the book. But I was wondering, can you read other people's work while you're writing, or is that something that has to be separate? Sometimes we have writers who just can't read, or they can't read within the same genre.
I do, but I will read some other ones. The problem that I'm starting to have now is I'll read, and it's like, God, I wouldn't have put that there. And so I get a little bit critical. But there are ones that I'll read, particularly a fiction, a novel, like, wow, that was a neat idea. I wish I could have thought of that. So I do look at it a little more outside critically than I did in the past.
Now, this might sound like a weird question, but, well, they all do.
Trust me, I've had patience for 30 years with weird questions, so this isn't going to be weird
I've got
at
a
all.
Pain.
I'm sure.
I've got a pain, or, you know, no. Because we talk to a lot of fiction writers as well as nonfiction, but in the fiction writers, people talk about their characters, and they talk about it like relationships. A lot of them will say, well, my characters are like my children, or like whatever, family. And they hear the voices in the head, and the whole works. We hear all this stuff. In the true crime world where I'm from, that's completely nutball. But I'm curious, what are your relationships with your characters, or do you have one?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm glad you asked, because one of the things that I was asked to do this time around is for me to interview my leading protagonist. And I did it kind of the same way his girlfriend does, butting heads with him, not agreeing with him and saying, oh, you're so great. And so it's an interesting thing that I did. And it kind of made me proud that, you know, we're not the same. I don't agree with everything you do, but I understand. And so I actually did have that published on social media. And it was kind of a unique thing for me to read, to see that I'm interviewing my own lead protagonist in this series.
That's interesting.
Psychotherapy.
Like my son said, it's a whole lot cheaper than that.
It absolutely is. I'm wondering, in the course of your writing, has any of your characters done anything to surprise you? Have they kind of gone off the rails and maybe rebelled against the plot?
I've had a couple do some things that you wouldn't think they would have. Some good, some of them not good. And the way I'm writing this, there will be a couple of recurring characters, but each novel there'll be some new characters. And so I'm not making it the same thing each time. What I'm trying to do is to weave new characters in with reference to older characters, just some degree to give the story familiarity. But yes, I've had some characters that were good in one book and not so good in the next.
Yeah. So how do you like social media, or do you? Do you like to interact with readers?
I do. I don't mind it. You know, during my years in medicine, I basically did not have time for it. It's no way it's going to happen. But I do like interacting with it to some degree. Do I sit there and check my phone all the time? No. And, I get to it a couple of times a day and do the best that I can on it. But for it to control what opinions of other people are of me or my characters or whatever, I realize it's just one component of the whole structure there.
Yeah, it certainly is. You got to watch what you do and stuff. So how do people get a hold of you, or how do you like people to get a hold of you? Is it social media, or do you have a website?
Both, yes. My website is dmarshall with two L's, Craig, C-R-A-I-G, books.com. So it's dmarshallcraigbooks.com. And it'll tell about me. It'll tell about my previous career in medicine and now as a winemaker and a writer. And then it'll give a number of different references to people who have read my books and the like. One humorous article that was on for a while, I don't know if it still is on, is, as I told you, my younger son is a journalist in Los Angeles. And I never told him all the time he was growing up that 25 years ago I wrote a book. And so I come up to North Carolina and in 2019 revised this book, and he's talking to his mom on the phone one day. He was living in Chicago, and his mom goes, "Yeah, well, your dad's going to send you a copy of his book online. And he wants you to review it." He goes, "What book? What are you talking about?" And so he said, "Oh, well, I didn't tell you 25 years ago, your dad wrote a thriller novel." And he's a journalist, and he got a master's in journalism at Northwestern. And so I had never told him, and he was just astonished, and he couldn't. So I sent it to him, and he did a great job editing of it, of that sort. Back to how you can get a hold of me on Facebook and Instagram. It's at D. Marshall Craig Books.
Of course, and we'll have that up on our website so people can find you with one click.
You bet. And then
the way of the world. Yeah.
To purchase the books, there's links on my website to all different kind of retail sites where you can purchase the book.
Yeah, and we'll have that up too. Remember. So, you know, do doctors make bad patients? That's what I hear.
Oh, doctors are the worst. I'll tell you that right now. And then I'm not going to stick up for my gender. For the most part, first off, you never say always and you never say never, because those will come back and get you. But for the most part, men are worse, way worse patients than women. Women, when they decide they want to do something or have something done, there can be two earthquakes, a tsunami, a hurricane, and three tornadoes, and it's not going to stop them. And men, they'll waffle and waver, and I've caught myself doing the same thing. But, yeah, I would say by far women are much more compliant patients.
Yeah, right. So you should have had a woman doctor as your lead character.
Well, let's just say with personal experience, I had a lot more experience being a man.
I guess that's probably true.
Well, you know what they say, and the best advice I've been given is write what you know, and that's what I know. So,
well, there you go. You hear it here first. Well, it's been a great conversation. The book we are talking about is called Hidden Agendas, and it's a Dr. Kyle Chandler thriller book 2. And the guest is the author, D. Marshall Craig. Thanks for being here.
Al, David, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me be on the show.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.